Good morning. Rick Moore is not here. He's off visiting his grandmother on her 90th-something birthday. This is Sean McCord subbing in for our annual Virginia Film Festival show. Yay! It's days away from the festival. In fact, let's hear from our first guest, Jody Kielbasa. Jody, when does the festival open?
The festival opens on Thursday, November 1st, and runs through November 4th. And Sean, thanks for having us back on here today, part of a tradition that we've enjoyed with you for at least four years for me. This is my fourth festival, but the 25th anniversary Virginia Film Festival.
That's awesome. The wake-up call is brought by support for WNRN today. It comes from L. Oppelman, serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, rifles and handguns, game systems, TV cameras, and tools with new inventory arriving every day. This holiday season, you could take advantage of L. Oppelman's layaway plan and get a head start on your Christmas list. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. This is WNRN 91.9 and a call out to Richmond 103.1. It's the wake-up call with Jody Kielbasa and Wes Harris. Wes, I'm going to lean over and say good morning.
Good morning, Sean. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you both for being here. Is this really the this is your fourth festival, Jody?
This is my fourth festival, yes.
Wow, and the fourth time we've had you on this show on this weekend.
That's right.
Well, terrific. Well,
I cut in to embarrass Jody and say that it's my sixth counting intern year, so deal with that.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, this is like my 20th, so.
Yeah, is it your 20th? I mean, how many years have you've been participating as a discussant, as helping to write film synopses for the program?
Self-promote a bit. You've earned it, Sean. You really have.
Yeah. Panelist and blogger, so many different ways that you've been involved.
Well, it's a pleasure. You know, it's a great festival, and it really is a gem that we're able to do something like that in this area. And bring in so many people from the industry, so many people from out of town, but also offer something for locals to get a little bit of Hollywood once a year right here in Charlottesville. It's an awesome thing. And since you brought it up, I hope that more people, as they listen to this show, will think, well, you know what? Instead of just going to the movies, maybe I should volunteer for feature festivals, because really it's the volunteers that keep this thing going.
That's absolutely correct. We have over 150 volunteers that participate each year in the Virginia Film Festival, and really, really could not run it without them. It's so remarkable, the hours that they put in to help us put this festival on, and we're really grateful to them.
So this is the 25th anniversary of the Virginia Film Festival. We want to bring that up a few times. What special things have you done for the 25th anniversary? I saw a half-hour feature on one of our local TV stations about this year's festival, and also a little bit about the history of the festival. Can you, before we really plunge into what we're showing this year, can you talk, Jody, what it means to you to be carrying on that legacy, and how some of the past events are going to be echoed this year?
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. I'm particularly proud of that special this year, because that special was produced by the Virginia Film Festival and Newsplex, and it was broadcast throughout the entire Commonwealth, including the D.C. on network. And so we estimate it potentially went into over 5 million households, and that was funded in part by the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and part of that is to continue to promote Charlottesville as a destination, and the Virginia Film Festival is a destination film festival. And the great good fortune that I've had in moving here to Charlottesville, besides the fact that it's been a wonderful move for me and for my family, and being part of the University of Virginia, which is a true privilege, but really, I inherited a festival that really had deep roots in the community and great bones, and it's been tremendous fun for me to build upon that, to try and further engage the community, to grow those roots even further. And I think that's what I'm most proud of, is how engaged the community is with the Virginia Film Festival. We're coming off of 3 record-setting years of attendance, and we are already tracking 25% ahead of last year's ticket sales. Now, knock on wood, the storm doesn't stop that.
Right.
People keep coming out, but right now it's looking pretty good.
So now, here's a question. Sorry, this is an awkward question, but do you have a way to determine how many more of these ticket sales, the increased ticket sales that you're talking about, are people coming from out of town, and how many more are people here in Charlottesville, because I know every year I always meet someone who says, oh, yeah, the film festival. I've never been there.
Yeah. Well, we do. We're tracking about 24-25% that are from out of this county.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. Now, whether they're coming from the Commonwealth or from Pennsylvania or somewhere in the mid-Atlantic, we're not always positive, but we're able to start getting better at determining that, and that's part of the thing that we're trying to do. We're taking a survey this year. It's part of our commitment to tourism and as serving as an economic catalyst for this region to be able to track that. But, you know, at the heart of it, we're an arts festival. We're a film festival. So our major focus is on every year bringing the very best possible cinema here to Charlottesville and celebrating that cinema and engaging the community in a dialogue about important topics and issues that are at the heart of these films.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the location. I mean, if there are people here who don't know that the festival is going on, how could they miss it? Where is the festival happening? We've been talking about Charlottesville in general, but talk a little bit about the venues and the cooperation that you're getting from these venues to show the films.
Well, sure. The festival's presented by the University of Virginia and the College and Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, and it always has been. But I don't want people to think, oh, this is just a university-centric event.
Mm-hmm.
It's an event for the entire community and actually for the Commonwealth of Virginia. It was founded by Governor Gerald Baliles 25 years ago to start to promote film in the Commonwealth of Virginia, along with Patricia Kluge and Bob O'Neill, who was the president of the University of Virginia at the time. And over that time, that has been the focus and the mission to promote filmmaking in Virginia, to support Virginia filmmakers, and to celebrate the very best cinema that we possibly can. We present in three theaters on the downtown mall, in Regal Cinemas, in Vinegar Hill Theaters on the downtown mall, in the Paramount Theater all 4 days of the festival. So there's a hub there, a real triangle. Our festival headquarters and box office are headquartered in the Main Street Arena. Our Filmmakers and Sponsors Lounge is in Escafé.
Mm-hmm.
Family Day takes place not only with a screening of Snow White in the Paramount Theater, but outside City Place with stages, musical stages with performers there and face painting and balloon painting on Saturday, November 3rd, along with a free screening of Snow White and imagine Snow White, Disney classic, celebrating its 75th anniversary in the Paramount for free. And then we have over 450 elementary school students coming in and presenting their films in Regal and in City Space that morning. And then we screen in Now Auditorium on the grounds of the university. That's the new South Lawn.
Mm-hmm.
In brand new, newly renovated Newcomb Hall, which is beautiful, and nobody's screened in there yet. We're going to be the very first, and it's been under renovation for 2 years, and it's just opening again, and it's a beautiful facility. And this year, we're not in Culberth on the grounds because they're under renovation.
Right.
They're going to be, we'll be back there next year, and of course, they're building a new theater next to it, the Kaplan, which will be a thrust stage, and we hope to screen there in the future. But really, we're on the grounds of the university and downtown, on the downtown mall. And again, our festival headquarters and box office are open right there at the Main Street Arena. So our opening night gala is at the Jefferson, and our late night wrap party on Saturday evening is at the Main Street Arena. They're all open to the public.
Well, I think that's a very important point, because even though this is sponsored by the university and has been for all of its existence, for all 25 years,
correct?
It very much takes place in Charlottesville, in town, that you'd have a hard time avoiding it if you went anywhere near downtown from November 1st through November 4th. Wes, you've been sitting there patiently for a few minutes.
Indeed.
Jody is the director of the film festival. Why don't you tell us your title and what it is that you do?
Well, I'm the associate programmer and production coordinator at the festival. So Jody and I work together, culling together the program of films. And to skip back a couple steps to answer your question about what we're doing specially for the 25th anniversary, what we've done is pulled together the strongest slate of films that I think we've had since Jody or I have been involved with the film festival, ranging from, you know, premiere screenings that'll be sort of a couple months out from circling back to these myriad venues we're using in town, down to films that you're never going to see in this area, might never see on Netflix or Hulu or whatever else that you use to view on a differently sized screen. That's what we've done. That's special. That's what Jody and I do together. In addition to that, the sort of production part of it is just making it happen.
Yeah.
Getting the stuff, getting the people, getting the things working, greasing all the wheels.
Well, let's talk about that topic for a minute. That is how you choose the films, how you do that balance between films that are going to get wide release or probably will get wide release, and those films that the only opportunity people really in the Central Virginia area may have to see is to come to the film festival. How do you as a programmer balance that?
And I want to give a quick nod to Wes here. When I first came here, Wes's position was the production coordinator, and after really a very short period of time of working, and I had launched a call for entries, which had not been done at the festival for a number of years, opening up submissions to filmmakers from all over the world and also focusing on Virginia filmmakers as well. And I asked Wes to run that, and it became very clear to me that he had an exceptional eye for film and a very keen mind, and we worked very well together, and I asked him if he would become an associate programmer, because my goal and my ambition was to grow the festival. Before I got here, we were screening, I think, about 70 films, and of course we're screening well over 100, and that needs help and it needs collaboration, and Wes has been absolutely incredible. He brings a different eye to the table, and in this partnership, and also over 25 years younger than I am, so he has a different perception, which I value tremendously. And as a result,
you're
of
only
that,
slightly older than my parents.
Okay, thank you very much, Wes.
You're welcome.
Remember, I'm talking now. And as a result of that, I think we have a stronger festival and a stronger program as a result of that collaboration. So I'm very grateful for that.
Wes, if your head is not too swollen.
No, that's very sweet. I appreciate that very much, Jody.
Remember not to drift too far from your mic.
Absolutely. All right. So the analogy that I always use is in terms to return to the question that you had asked, Sean, about how to balance, how to have your tent poles, your premieres, and also your smaller independents, foreigns, et cetera. The analogy I like to use is that of planning sort of a shopping mall. You've got your anchors. You've got your big three or four. You've got your opening centerpiece and closing night films around which you are able to have your boutique shops, your independent films, your foreign works, that those big films that sell out early, that are in the big venues, then draw people to all of those other screenings that they're not able to get into the big film, or even if they do and then want get energized by it and want to go, you know, to the pretzel shop around the corner,
right,
to the independent film playing down the street.
See, I see it more like a box of chocolates.
Same absolute thing. You got to have that raspberry jam in the corner that moves you over to the peanut brittle in the middle.
We are listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Jody Kilbasa and Wes Harris of the Virginia Film Festival. Today's programming is supported by Dixon Disposal, family-owned and operated for 40 years. Dixon Disposal works to promote green awareness. Dixon offers all-in-one can recycling so you won't have to spend time sorting or trying to figure out if items are recyclable. These recyclable items will not end up in the landfill. For more information on the all-in-one can recycling, DixonDisposal.com or 978-2111. All right. Well, I've been putting this off long enough. I'd like to go back and talk a little bit about the submission process, for example. But this is what people are tuned in for. Let's talk about the films.
All right. Those things.
What is our opening night film?
Well, the opening night film is Not Fade Away, which is produced by our longtime friend of the festival and advisory board chair, Mark Johnson, who, of course, has produced so many of Barry Levinson's films, won the Academy Award for producing Rain Man, produced the Chronicle of Narnia series. And this is David Chase, who, of course, created The Sopranos.
Sopranos, right.
A directorial feature directorial debut. And it stars James Gandolfini and a wonderful young actor named John Magaro and another rising star named Bella Heathcote. And it's really about a young man who forms a band in the 60s, who's at odds with his father, who's played by Gandolfini, who I don't think really gets it. And I spoke to Mark Johnson about this film, and he described it almost as if it's a musical diner. sense. And don't want to give anything away about the film. Mark Johnson will be there to present the film. It's selling well. It's not quite sold out. Of course, this year we moved the opening night from Culberth into the Paramount. Mm-hmm. But I suspect by opening night all the tickets will be gone. And we think it's a great opening. It was the centerpiece film of this year's New York Film Festival just about 3 weeks ago. So we're thrilled to be able to open the 25th anniversary Virginia Film Festival with it.
And for those still riding high from the two recent Boss concerts in town, the two Bruce Springsteen concerts, the soundtrack was produced by E Street Band member Steve Van Zandt.
Also of The Sopranos.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, okay, so right now, if people are hearing this and they're getting really excited and they don't know how to get tickets, how do people get tickets, Wes?
Well, our online box office is open 24 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
which is the easiest way.
And the website address is?
VirginiaFilmFestival.org.
.org.
Indeed. Thank you, Sean. And I don't remember what our hours are today at the downtown box office, but at least starting tomorrow, we're there pretty much all day long.
Every day from noon to five, and then pretty much around the clock until the movies stop once the festival opens.
That's in the festival headquarters in the Main Street Arena, the former Ice Park on the downtown mall.
That's right. You can't miss it. There's big blue Virginia Film Festival 25th anniversary signing all on the windows there, and just go on in there, and you can get your tickets in person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a UVA centric, we have the UVA Arts box office currently in the process of being renovated Culberth Theater, but in the front just to the right as you enter the doors, we also have tickets available there.
What do tickets cost? I know there's a range.
Tickets range. The top price for a ticket is $20, but there's really only two films that are $15 to $20 in the festival, and everything else, the top price is $11 for a ticket, and then we have matinee discounts that bring the price down to $8. There's student discounts. It's really an incredible...
The student discount being free.
Yes, not all students. That's University of Virginia students.
For
yes,
free.
That's correct, because of our support from the university, but nonetheless, mm-hmm. there's student discounts for students elsewhere. As I mentioned earlier, the family day screening of Snow White at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday morning, November 3rd at the Paramount is free. So, you've got to also remember that almost every panel has somebody every film has somebody introducing it or a panel afterwards. So it's really a remarkable experience. And I think that one of the fun things about the festival the last couple years is we have been previewing some of the top films that will be in the running for the Golden Globes and the Academy Awards 3 weeks, a month, 2 months before they appear.
Don't get too far away from your microphone.
Thank you.
You see what happens? You start talking, you get relaxed, you lean back, you start talking to each other.
I thought that was a wrap it up, we're going to a commercial.
No, it was a get a little closer to your microphone, because I can only do so much to crank up the sound on this side. And also there are passes that people can get, Jody.
You can get a 5-film pass, which gives you a discount on the films as well. And if you're going to see, if you're going to see 4 or 5 films, I really strongly suggest you get a 5-film pass or mm-hmm. get 2 of them if you're really going to see like 10 or more. And a lot of people do that. We're constantly blown away by the number of people who come up to me and say, I saw 15 films. I saw 18 films. We have a very aggressive program. People literally run from the grounds of the university to downtown and back to see films and to catch panels. And, when you have people coming in like Woodward and Bernstein or Max Kennedy or Keith Carradine for a screening of The Duelist, or if you have the world premiere of a film that was shot by someone living in Charlottesville, Eric Kurt,
mm-hmm.
called House Hunting, and you've got Mark Singer and Haley DuMond and Art LaFleur coming in, and a large cast of people that live in the Commonwealth, then people get excited. They want to show up, and it's remarkable. We've already had 8 films sell out, and as I mentioned before, we're about 25% ahead of last year's pace so far for box office, so we'll see where that ends up, but I think we're going to have a lot of folks.
We have these things called 5-film passes that offer a bit of a discount, and I can just barely count on one hand the number of which that my mother has purchased this year.
your mother, who's only slightly younger than Jody.
I will fail to comment.
We'll talk in a few minutes about many of the guests, Jody. You already rattled off several of them, and I'm sure people who are listening, their ears perked up when you said them. But I want to remind you that support for WNRN comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. You can find fall warmth at Blue Ridge with jackets, vests, and sweaters from the North Face, Patagonia, and Mountain Hardware. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and at two locations, Richmond. For more information, it's brms.com. The markets are Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia, and the Shenandoah Valley is complex and confusing. There's a Richmond wind advisory from 8 a.m. Monday to 6 a.m. Tuesday. In Charlottesville, high wind warning noon Monday to 8 p.m. Tuesday, 45 to 60 mile per hour wind, 30% chance rain, 40% chance rain in Richmond, and overcast today with a high of 55 to 60. Of course, the big wild card in all this is Hurricane Sandy, which at the moment looks like it might hit ground further north than us, but we got to keep an eye on that one, folks. Notwithstanding, rain after 8, 100%, 70% in Richmond, 80% in Lynchburg, windy tonight with a low 45 to 50. Then rain and wind, 80% chance. So no matter where it lands, we're going to get hit a little bit. Tomorrow with a high of 49 to 54 degrees. Right now in the valley, it's clear, 58 degrees. Excuse me, it's cloudy and 58 degrees. Cloudy, 59 in Lynchburg, cloudy and 59 in Richmond, and cloudy and 58 with Sean McCord and the Wake Up Call on the Virginia Film Festival at WNRN.
Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Well, thank you, disembodied voice. We are sitting in the studio with Wes Harris and Jody Kubasa of the Virginia Film Festival. It is our annual look at the Virginia Film Festival. And Jody, you rattled off some guests who are going to be here next week, starting with Woodward and Bernstein. Tell us about why they're here and what they're going to be doing.
Governor Gerald Blyles, I mentioned, helped found the Virginia Film Festival 25 years ago, and I sat down with the governor, who heads the Miller Center here at the University of Virginia, about a year ago, and we started talking about ways we could work together again, and I wanted to see if I could involve him in the festival once more for this 25th anniversary and moving forward. And he mentioned the concept of a presidency in film series that would explore the presidency through film, and I immediately became excited. We happened to realize that it was the 40th anniversary of Watergate this year, and immediately, you know, touched upon the idea of screening All the President's Men. And as good fortune would have it, Bob Woodward signed up to come in to talk about it, and we immediately approached Carl Bernstein and asked him if he would join in, and shortly thereafter he agreed, and I've asked Governor Blyles to moderate this conversation, and the screening will take place on Friday evening, November 2nd, at the Paramount Theater. The conversation will take place afterwards. Both Woodward and Bernstein will be signing books afterwards. I think they'll be signing All the President's Men, and of course Bob Woodward will be signing his latest book that's out as well. And I'm excited about this. I studied All the President's Men when I was in high school. That was front and center in American history. It's an event that obviously shaped American history, and to have Woodward and Bernstein, who were front and center in this investigation pretty much from the earliest period, to come in and talk about it and share the stage together, I think it's one of the great gifts that the festival can provide for Charlottesville. When we bring back historical figures that have actually shaped this country's history, as we did with the Freedom Riders right. several years ago, and brought in several of the original Freedom Riders.
That was excellent.
This year, we're doing Ethel, which is a wonderful documentary about Ethel Kennedy. And of course, Bobby and Ethel Kennedy spent the first couple years of their marriage here. And Bobby Kennedy went to UVA Law School 62 years ago and was actually involved in a very important event. By all accounts, he was a very mediocre law student. And he approached Colgate Darden, the president of the university then, and wanted to bring in Dr. Ralph Bunche to speak. Now, Dr. Bunche had just won the Nobel Peace Prize and was the head of the UN and also happened to be an African-American.
Right.
And Dr. Bunche agreed to come in to speak, but only if it was in front of an integrated audience, which just had never happened at the university at that point.
In the 1950s.
In 1950, yes. And I don't believe it happened in Charlottesville and probably hadn't happened in the Commonwealth. And Bobby Kennedy approached Colgate Darden. cited a legal case setting precedent, and Darden decided to push forward with it. And that occurred in Cavill Hall. And we're going to be screening Ethel in Cavill Hall. And we have Max Kennedy, Bobby and Ethel's son, coming in to talk about it. With Larry Sabato of the Center for Politics, which is part of an ongoing partnership we have for the Center of Politics, marking important events during the 1960s. And we're thrilled to be once again revisiting this history on the grounds of the university in Cavill Hall.
You know, and I think this is those bookends right there, those two films are a good example of what the Virginia Film Festival can do so well. All the President's Men, you know, an anniversary of Watergate, and a really good film. I watched it again 4 or 5 years ago, and because I wanted to kind of refamiliarize myself with it. And it is a tense political thriller. Even though we were there, and we kind of know, you know, how it all ends up. Man, there are moments in that film when I was still on the edge of my seat.
It really is tense, you know, and you mentioned a good film. That film is also part of our Library of Congress series because it's on the National Film Registry, which was an act of Congress in 1989 established whereby they would recognize films that have been deemed culturally and historically significant. And All the President's Men is on that list. We've got three other films, part of the festival, that we're highlighting as well. Mm-hmm. Sherman's March is one of them, and Wes, do you want to talk a little bit about Ross McElwee coming to town with Sherman's March and Photographic Memory?
Yeah, absolutely.
Remind us of Sherman's March, because I saw that film when it came out in the early 80s?
86, I think.
Yeah, okay.
6 or 7?
Yeah, right.
If I'm right. But yeah, we're returning Ross McElwee to the Virginia Film Festival after about 20 years. He first came a couple years after the premiere of Sherman's March, and then skipped ahead and came during the spring of 2005 with his film Bright Leaves. So we're bringing him back for the third time, actually. And he's returning with his son, Adrian, for a film called Photographic Memory. And that film is about his relationship with his son. This is a legend of direct cinema, of personal documentary. There's no real term been coined for what it is that Ross McElwee does, which is why I'm such an admirer. But we're showing Sherman's March, which is ostensibly about following the path that William Tecumseh Sherman followed throughout the South on his sort of reign, as it were.
Right.
But it really becomes more about McElwee himself sort of suiting various ladies and feeling anxious about a possible nuclear holocaust and whatever else that kind of fits on the page or the frame.
Right. But this film came out. It was, as you said, he's a documentary filmmaker. He was ostensibly going to be making a film about Sherman's March, and then it really became a film about him and breaking up with his girlfriend.
His process of thinking through these thoughts he had about the film he had planned to make.
Right, right. So I just go into that detail because it's important, because that's a relevant detail to talk about what his new film is.
Absolutely.
And what he's doing with that.
The latest film is Photographic Memory, which in which it's... He hasn't said so. I hope to pull it out of the phrasing out of him when he's here to get him to admit that it's something of a loose sequel to Sherman's March.
Right.
Because it is him returning to an area of France wherein he was sort of floundering about a few years before making Sherman's March.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also showing his 40-minute short film Backyard. With that screening of Photographic Memory, some excerpts of which are used within Photographic Memory. It's basically him returning back to his hometown of Charlotte back in the, I believe it was still late 70s, if not early 80s, and sort of feeling that tension, that tension and release with his father and more successful brother and so on and so forth before he was this renowned documentarian. We'll be showing that. Then we'll be showing his new film, Photographic Memory. Both he and his son, both of whom are at the center of the film, will be there to discuss.
And if you love documentary films, this guy is a rock star in the world of documentary
films.
There are documentary film festivals that do retrospectives of his work all over the world. He's brought in and honored for his work all the time. So it's really fortunate for us to be able to have him here for these three films, here to talk about it, and his son to share in that personal journey. So I certainly hope people will take advantage of that, because he's a really, really a remarkable filmmaker.
Speaking of personal journeys, the first time I met Ross McElwee was actually in the offices of the Virginia Film Festival in the spring of 2005 when I was taking I was a student at UVA at the time, with the Jody's predecessor, Richard Herskowitz, was teaching a contemporary independent film and video course, brought in Ross McElwee for for a couple of screenings at Vinegar Hill. And we sort of just sat around where now we have our large oval table, Jody. And I met the man, and we watched both Charlene and Backyard, the film, the short I mentioned earlier that we'll be screening. It was the first time he had watched those two shorts in, I believe he said, you know, at least a decade and a half. So it was sort of special to be there with him revisiting something from his own sort of late 20s, early 30s, while I was sort of entering that phase myself. And now we're bringing him back with his son, who is just a few years younger than I. And they are very excited to be returning to Charlottesville. I've exchanged emails with Ross about how just sort of fielding these anecdotes about going how they went fishing back in the day when they were here at Albemarle, going up to visit Monticello. They're excited to be coming back. They're happy to be at the Virginia Film Festival, and I couldn't ask for a couple better ambassadors for the festival than bringing back Ross and Adrian McElwee.
Well, that's an interesting point. The Virginia Film Festival is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. So at that age, you all have an opportunity to, as you said, bring people back.
Indeed.
I mean, people who screened films here, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. Jody, you want to talk a bit about that? Because on the 25th anniversary, I know there are a few moments where you are, you know, screening films that have been screened in the past or bringing back filmmakers that have been here in the past.
Well, you know, certainly our board is returning in full force this year, and they've been a part of the festival for years. Mark Johnson, actually, I went back into the archives and into the vaults and took a look through the very first program, and it was interesting because a very, very young Mark Johnson was part of the first festival,
right,
and screened Diner, which had been out for a couple of years, but he presented Diner that year. So it's great to have Mark back this year with a new film. One of the films that we're screening as part of the Library of Congress series is The Manchurian Candidate, which has been screened. In fact, James Ford pointed it out several times. And although I will disagree with James, I think there's a reason to screen it this year because there's such a focus on politics leading up to the election.
Isn't this the 50th anniversary of that film?
Yeah, I believe it is. It is, yeah. Yes, as well. So another reason. And we're having the American History guys talk about this film afterwards, which
right.
should be a lot of fun. And, you know, there's a lot of films during the festival where we take a look at films like this and say, okay, this is a great time. I mean, All the President's Men was a perfect example, 40th mm-hmm. anniversary of Watergate, to take a look at that film. But I think more than anything, the way the festival's morphed the last few years is the festival, as you know, Sean, has become a little bit more contemporary. When we look at archival or classic films, we really try and put them in context.
Yes.
So we'll screen three or four or five together, like our Library of Congress series, or we'll look at an anniversary like the 50th anniversary of The Manchurian Candidate, 75th anniversary of Snow White,
yeah.
which really sort of launched the concept of a large animated feature.
It was the first animated
feature.
It was,
feature. Exactly. Yeah. And so significant for that and for the artwork and just really a landmark film. So
and if you've only ever seen it on TV,
well,
it's a gorgeous film.
This is a gift. I can't tell you. Disney protects these films. They don't release them very often, and they mm-hmm. certainly don't let general audiences see them on a big movie palace screen. So we spent a long period of time talking and going back and forth with Disney, and they allowed us to be able to do this. It's our outreach and education programs are sponsored by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and also a grant from the Community Foundation, and we're thrilled to be able to present this on the big screen for free to families. And like I said, it may be the first time kids and even moms and dads have had that opportunity to see it on a big screen. And so I hope everybody takes advantage of it. But, you know, more than anything, not only have we grown the program, I think I mentioned that the festival used to screen 65 to 70 films. This year we're going to be screening closer to about 120 films during the festival.
Wow.
But most of those films are contemporary films that are out on the film festival circuit now, mm-hmm. or in many cases have not been released yet. Our bigger studio pictures that I mentioned that will be part of the upcoming awards season. I mean, a perfect example of a gem of a film, which I encourage people to see, is our closing night film, which is a beautiful film called The Sessions that stars right. Helen Hunt and John Hawkes and William H. Macy. And it's based on a true story about a man who is largely confined to an iron lung. And his story of at the age of 36 deciding that he wanted to know love and have sex and be touched before he died. And he was a devout Catholic, and he approached his priest, which in this case is played by Macy, and asked him, for forgiveness, and that would it be okay to do this? And the priest said, "Who am I to stop you? Knock yourself out." And he engages a sex therapist, which is the role played by Helen Hunt. Beautiful portrayal, and I almost guarantee you that both Helen Hunt and John Hawkes will be nominated for Academy Awards for this film. And it's a very, very beautiful, sensitive, no pun intended, touching film. And
you intended that. Yes, I did.
But seriously, I really encourage people to go out and see this beautiful film. And it's that opportunity to see these films, days, weeks, months before mm-hmm. they come out, and see them first, and see them in the context of the festival that I think is so unique. So we've focused our efforts on more contemporary films, and as I mentioned, when we look back, there'll be a strong reason for screening a particular film. Either we have a guest person in, like last year, the 20th anniversary of JFK, right. and bringing in Oliver Stone in a conversation with Larry Sabato, or all the President's Men this year, or we're looking ahead with contemporary films. And really, when you think about it, with over 100 films, what an incredible canvas to paint on. And the engagement that we can do with the community, with social service groups and other cultural organizations is vast.
Well, and I want to get to those contemporary films, but before we completely close this chapter, you've mentioned a couple of times the National Film Registry and the Library of Congress, mm-hmm. and I'm bringing this up because this is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart. You've really built a relationship with the Library of Congress in the past few years, and what many people may not know is that the Library of Congress film repository of most of their films is just a few miles up the road in Culpeper.
Well, and that's true. You told me all about it the first time we had coffee three and a half years ago.
Right.
And I had no idea that it was that close to us. For some reason, in my mind, it was up in Washington, D.C. So to realize that it was really just a scant 45-minute drive mm-hmm. up 29, mm-hmm. and that it's just a remarkable place. I still say to this day, when you're down in the vaults, and to put this in perspective to everybody out there listening, it's in Mount Pony, and it used to be essentially a bank. Depository for gold bullion in case there was a federal depository in case there was a nuclear attack, so that they could sort of build the economy again.
Mm-hmm.
You go into film vaults that are two and three and four stories underneath the ground, going in an elevator, and they're all kept at 32 degrees or below. It's freezing down there. People are walking around in these huge sort of Michelin tireman ski jackets to keep warm. And, you know, they have the original master prints of Gone with the Wind.
Right.
And Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and it happened one night, and they're in these tiny cubby holes that are protected. If there's a fire, then a sheet of film of water comes down, and that cubbyhole shuts instantly, and the fire snuffed out. It's just remarkable, and they do incredible film preservation there and restoration, and it's just...
On that note, the one film that we're showing in the Library of Congress series that's actually not part of the National Film Registry, but one of the prints that the library is supplying us with, one of which they're most proud of their own restoration efforts, is that of Sparrows, the silent film that we'll be showing with live musical accompaniment on Sunday morning,
the Mary Pickford film,
mm-hmm. with Matt Marshall and the Real Music Ensemble there in-house, doing their thing, as they've done for numerous years in the past. So if you're something of a Matt Marshall groupie, come on out, because we'll be showing Sparrows, and it should be absolutely pristine. There is no opportunity to see this film look better anywhere in the world than what we'll be doing on Sunday morning.
Right. And so I just wanted to bring that up because, again, the Virginia Film Festival is uniquely situated to have a relationship with the Library of Congress and show some of these classical films. And we'll get back to the contemporary films in just a minute. I need to remind you that today's programming on WNRN is brought to you by Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics at 434-296-9746 and at brgtshirts.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Market Tiger Fuels and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstand Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find on this week's Hook.
Well, Rick is not here today. This is Sean McCord subbing. 2 years after teenager Samantha Clark disappeared, both her family and the police think Randy Taylor is a suspect. Taylor, however, says he's an innocent man who has been unfairly targeted and harassed, and a judge agrees. Former Scottsville Mayor Raymond Thacker recently celebrated his 103rd birthday, and The Hook looks at the remarkable life he has led and is still living. And this week's Hook also contains the full program for this year's Virginia Film Festival, listing every single film, a full schedule, articles, and biographies for many of the guests. The Hook, all the news you didn't know you needed. All right, this is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm Sean McCord, subbing for host Rick Moore. We have Wes Harris and Jody Klobasa of the Virginia Film Festival. Okay, let's just start rolling off films. People are on the edge of their seats now.
Cool.
Man with the Iron Fist. Talk about Man with the
Man with the Iron Fist.
Who is the director of this film, Jody? Are you well practiced?
Yes,
RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan.
How do you spell that?
RZA.
That is all caps. You got to hit that key first, and then it's RZA. Or, well, never mind. I'm just ribbing on Jody here, for anyone who's wondering at home. It's a Quentin Tarantino presented, which means he's slapped his name as executive producer on the film, and rightly so, because it is an incredibly entertaining romp through medieval China, starring Russell Crowe and Lucy Liu and RZA himself.
And Pam Grier.
Absolutely. The incomparable Pam Grier from the most underrated Quentin Tarantino film, Jackie Brown. It's exactly what you would hope and a whole lot more. And we're showing that.
So this is a hip-hop kung fu Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah. Let's say yes. So we've got that as sort of our sort of unofficial second opening night film on Thursday night in the Paramount Theater. We've got that at 10:30 p.m. So mm-hmm. Please do come out. It's going to be great. We're showing it just barely in advance of its official release. So it should be a really fun late night film to all get together for.
And it's not even that late. Come on, it's 10:30 at night.
On a Thursday. In Charlottesville.
That's right.
And Jody?
No, I just, the last couple of years we've sort of established a tradition of having almost like a double opening. The official opening night film, of course, is not Fade Away, but in past years we had Black Swan followed by 127 Hours. Last year we had The Descendants, and then we followed it up immediately afterwards with a sold-out crowd from Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope to do that again this year with back-to-back sellouts. And again, The Man with the Iron Fists, I think it's absolutely fun. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, we're so glad that you programmed this film because it's just out of the mix and a lot of fun.
And you're not going to see it on a better screen or in a better house than we're showing it in the Paramount right. Theater on this coming Thursday night.
And speaking of musicians working their way into music, another local name that ought to be familiar to people is Boyd Tinsley.
Absolutely. With Faces in the Mirror
mm-hmm.
that we're showing on Saturday.
A wild, weird, and wonderful film, and that's what I've got to say about this. It's beautifully shot. It's fascinating. I think if you sit back and watch this film, it'll really blow your mind. Boyd is scheduled to attend and talk about the film afterwards.
May even sing a note or two.
Yeah, we never know.
This is at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon in Newcomb Hall Theater.
So if people pick up the program guide, if it falls out of their hook this week and they go through it, they'll see. Many of these guests that you've mentioned, Carl Bernstein, Ross McElwee, Boyd Tinsley, Bob Woodward. I understand there another local is returning, and this is new and didn't make it into the program.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about Billy Campbell.
Well, Billy Campbell's going to come back for Fat Kid Rules the World, which is directed by Matthew Lillard, who had been announced and is attending. And Matthew Lillard, you probably know from Scream. He was in The Descendants last year and as Shaggy in Scooby-Doo. But right. It's always fun to see an actor break out of that mold and expand their artistic horizons. And here he is directing a really fun film that was an audience favorite at South by Southwest Film Festival earlier this past spring. So he's coming in to talk about that film after the screening on Sunday evening. And we'll be joined by, original Charlottesville resident Billy Campbell.
Billy Campbell, who went off to Hollywood, became The Rocketeer, and then success in television and time and again.
Yeah, if you don't know him personally, because you're here in town, then you might know him as the politician role in The Killing.
The Killing, right on AMC.
The last couple years, yeah.
Right.
So it's great to be able to welcome him back here and have him participate.
It really is
in the
a great
festival.
Film. It should be a whole lot of fun. The two of them are just really good souls. They're going to come in. They're really good guys. It's Sunday evening at 7 p.m. in Newcomb Hall Theater on the grounds of the university. And it's will absolutely be a wonderful show. Please do attend.
And that's the thing about the festival is it just doesn't sort of die out with a whimper. It keeps going strong. Sunday night, all day Sunday and Sunday night is actually one of our strongest slate of films. And I think the last film comes down around 10 p.m.?
We've got a couple things starting at 9:30 on Sunday evening this year, which is unprecedented for the festival. We used to sort of die out, like you said, halfway through Sunday. And we are – the audience is – are not letting us die.
Yeah.
So we're keeping it running. We're meeting the demand. We're running it through Sunday evening.
And we'll be running on fumes at that point, but the audience will still be going strong. And again, like I said, we have an incredibly strong slate that day. You know, another film I think that I really hope people do not overlook is A Rust and Bone, which is a beautiful new foreign film starring Marion Cotillard, and my French is terrible.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
And I
really, again, this is a film, she's likely to be nominated for an Academy Award for her performance. And this is an incredible opportunity to see it on the big screen. You know, one other thing I wanted to talk about really, really quickly, too, because people probably don't know this yet, but the festival's actually going to go 5 days this year, because on Monday, November 5th, the new Regal theaters, all 14 of them, including the IMAX, will open at the Shops at Stonefield, and they have a charity day, and they're donating all the proceeds to the Virginia Film Festival. And they have an aggressive lineup of 14 films, most of them family-oriented, and mind you, school is out that day. All the films will be $2, and the popcorn is $2, soda's $2, candy $2, and they're going to be screening some art house films, like The Artist in Moonrise Kingdom and Midnight in Paris, but they're also going to be screening The Lorax, The Dark Knight Rises,
Avengers
in the IMAX theater.
Did you say The Artist?
Yes, The Artist and Moonrise Kingdom and Midnight in Paris, but the Avengers in the IMAX, Spider-Man, The Hunger Games, and it's just going to be a great day, and it's going to be going all morning, noon, and night. And again, all tickets $2, all candy, soda, popcorn $2, and 100% of the proceeds benefit the Virginia Film Festival. So, although I want everybody to attend the festival, and see all that they can, I want them to extend it a fifth day and go see some fun films down there and take the kids as well, too.
And we're also serving something of a PSA in that, in case you've forgotten that your kid's school will not be in session
yes,
on Monday.
Thank you.
Here might be an easy out for you.
Drop them up at Stonefield. So that's the new...
You're welcome.
That's the new shopping center at 29 and Hydraulic.
Yeah.
And this is the... you said there's an IMAX theater and stadium...
seating
theaters. And if you've never been there, I mean, I've gotten down to Short Pump, which is like an hour down the road, practically, just to see some films there because of the stadium seating. And in stadium seating, they're big screens. The seats are staggered so that you're not looking through someone. They're sort of raised up on a wall.
They do their job.
And they're very comfortable seats.
They get you out of the way.
And they're small theaters.
Yeah.
So this is an amazing opportunity. Where can people get information about that on the VirginiaFilmFestival.org website?
Sure can. VirginiaFilmFestival.org. We have the information on the Regal Charity Day, which is Monday, November 5th, all day and all night. Films will be $2 at the new Shops at Stonefield Regal Cinemas. Again, it's a 14-plex with an IMAX theater, and all the films will be $2 all day.
One of the films that caught my eye because of its unusual casting is Hyde Park on Hudson with, of all people, Bill Murray as FDR.
So why do you say that's unusual? I'm curious.
Only because we're used to Bill Murray in comedic roles, and I don't think I've ever seen him portray a historical character before. Certainly, if you're casting FDR, people might not think of Bill Murray first, but I've heard that he does a really remarkable job.
They've both got a pretty good sardonic grin, you've got to admit.
Well, you know, I think that Bill Murray over the years has really evolved as an actor. And yes, I mean, obviously earlier in his career, you know, he did some of those goofier things. But over the years, his abilities and stature and the variety of roles that he's played has changed. And yeah, this may be one of the more serious roles that he's played. But really, when you think about, you know, performances in Rushmore, some of the Wes Anderson films beyond that he's done. He's
Broken Flowers.
Yeah. He's really, really an exceptional actor as well. And for me, I always love to see some of these actors that have started out in comedy, like Robin Williams, like Bill Murray, who've gone on to expand beyond just that and still return to that because they're so brilliant at it as well.
So, you know, I'm actually going to really tie this back to Matthew Lillard because I think we've sort of encountered that same sort of, I'm not going to go so, and I'm not saying this to you, Sean, but to go so strongly as to say prejudice, but we've got a preconception about both of these actors. Both have been sort of goofy, you know, Matthew Lillard in the Scream series or, you know, the delightful Shaggy in the Scooby-Doo or whatever. But they're both incredibly underrated and much more versatile than I think most people will realize and be delightfully surprised by if they show up and see these things, especially with Lillard seeing his work from behind the camera. You know, I mean, these are vehicles in which we've not seen these two individuals, Bill Murray and Matthew Lillard, before, and that's what film festivals are for. They're for these sort of middle steps, these places where someone who's sort of on the way up or even already established like Bill Murray wants to take a slightly different direction. You come here and you do it and you show it to people.
There's another familiar name appearing at the film festival this year, somebody with the last name Clooney.
I don't know who that is. I don't know. I've never heard of that name.
You know, that's absolutely correct. We are screening Journey to Darfur, which is part of the sort of political and social issue sidebar that we're focused on this year leading up to the election. You know, we don't have overarching themes at the Virginia Film Festival anymore, and I've been happy for that because it's allowed us to actually explore a much wider variety of themes. That being said, there was just no way that we are going to ignore having a number of films that deal with politics at this year's festival because the election is 2 days later.
Right.
So, you know, certainly I think this is all about the politics of human rights and human life. And this is a relatively short film. It's roughly 30 minutes in length, but we have Nick Clooney, George Clooney's father, or I should say George Clooney is his son, coming in. And the Clooneys made this film together. They journeyed to Darfur together. And it's a partnership with the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Freedom of Expression, one of the world's longest organizational titles ever, but an important one nonetheless. And we're working with Josh Wheeler over there at the TJ Center. And he's going to be moderating a conversation with Nick Clooney, who's had quite a career in his own right, who's going to be coming in to talk about this film.
Okay, I'm going to pick a title. I'm going to ask each of you to do this. I know this is kind of like asking you to pick your favorite children.
This is Plinko.
But we've talked about some of the high-profile films, some of the high-profile guests. But let's talk about some of the films that might not be getting, you know, the attention because of a big star.
We're going
because
deep,
it's a
premiere. Is that what you're saying, Sean?
But
we're digging deep.
No.
Deep.
Something like that like you in particular just don't want people to miss.
Yeah.
Or just an intriguing title. For example, I'm intrigued by the Irish film Portrait of a Zombie.
Yeah.
It caught my eye because I thought, oh no, not another zombie film. But this isn't another zombie film.
It's not another zombie film. It's an Irish produced sort of quasi-documentary with a Charlottesville native starring as the head of the documentary crew within the film, Todd Fletcher, who's sort of documenting this family within Ireland whose son is sort of patient zero, as it were. And it's really about the family. It's framed in a way that no other zombie film has been framed. It's more intimate. It touches on aspects you would not expect, working class, you know, struggles that are just not part of Romero type zombie models.
Right.
It's not to be missed. That is one of our last two on Sunday evening. So please stick around for it. If you're in the long haul, we're going to cap it off with a zombie film for you, and you won't regret it.
If you're not making your way to any of the two opening night films, then you should make your way over to see Barry Levinson's latest film, The Bay, which is an ecological horror film that takes place on the Chesapeake Bay. And that's an exceptional new film. We have so many other great films during the festival that I hope people discover, like Dustin Hoffman's directorial debut, Quartet, which is a wonderful film. I mentioned Rust and Bone earlier. We've got a great documentary about healthcare called Escape Fire with a remarkable panel, and it actually focuses a good portion of the film on the UVA Office of Emergency Medicine, and we'll have Dr. Pamela Ross there to talk about this.
Johnny, I don't think you've mentioned Silver Linings Playbook.
Which is our centerpiece film, and it is going to be front and center in the awards season this year, and that's our centerpiece film on Saturday evening at the Paramount.
Had a lot of commercial play in the last week or so you should be kind of reminded of that between now and the festival.
And then immediately following, I mentioned the world premiere of House Hunting, which will also be at the Paramount Theater, and that was a film that's directed by Charlottesville resident Eric Hurt, produced by Erica Arvold, and has so many people here in Charlottesville and throughout the Commonwealth that have worked on that film. Mark Singer, remember from Beastmaster, will be, and also V.
Beastmaster,
V
yes.
is, I've Jody's always the Beastmaster guy, and I'm always the V guy when it comes to Mark Singer. V, the final battle. Thank you, Mark.
I'm a slave to my college days, what can I say? And some of the other great films, the foreign films in this program are truly remarkable as well.
Yeah, if I could
too.
Jump in about that, because I'm one of the few that I'm most excited about. There's a film called Alps, which is from the director of Dogtooth.
Could you spell that title?
Alps. A-L-P-S, yeah.
Right, okay.
Just as in the range. And sort of it follows a group, it's a Greek film following a group of people who sort of form of a new business venture. They're a collective that impersonate the recently deceased. They're contracted by the loved ones of the recently deceased and come in and will fill that role ostensibly for that healing process. It becomes about so much more. It's tough. It's hilarious. It's fun. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It is, if nothing else, completely unexpected. And it's one that I really hope to drive people to because it's a tremendous film. And in that vein, another film that I've got that I know we need to drive people toward is Mekong Hotel by the director of Syndromes in a Century, Uncle Boon Mi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives, a few others. Sean, I'm going to challenge you to pronounce the director's name right now. It's 9 syllables long.
No.
You do not win the washer dryer.
Apichat Pong Wirasitakal.
Darn it, that's just what I was going to say.
It's one of my favorites. It's one that I've got to point out to people. It's just about an hour long. If you've seen any of his other films, it's a real niche thing. So I just feel like I've got to waste some time on the air here to push people toward one of my favorite films in the festival, Mekong Hotel.
A quick guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Don't Stop Believin', which is
the
story
really
of Arnel Pineda, who is the Filipino, now lead singer for Journey, who was discovered singing online at a karaoke bar in Manila when they needed to find a new lead singer for Journey. It's inspirational. He was living on the streets for a while, and now he's the lead singer for Journey. And to see him sing for the very first time, going from singing in front of 100 people to singing before sold-out audience in a soccer stadium in Chile is remarkable, and what a voice. Don't Stop Believin'.
It really is a whole lot of fun. I liked it a lot more than I had any reason to think that I would, and
it's Journey, man. Come on, it's Journey. It's great.
It really is. It's a whole lot more than it's everything you'd want from Journey, and then
it's great film.
A couple extra films packed into that same thing.
Of the guests that are coming this year, Jody, you mentioned in passing Keith Carradine, but I don't think we've talked about what's bringing him this
year.
That's
right. And we're going to be screening The Duelist, Ridley Scott's first film as a director, which is this Napoleonic epic film that is a big grudge match. Mm-hmm. These two guys that just go at it through
great
like 15
mustaches.
Years. Yes, great mustaches. 15 years of the Napoleonic Wars constantly meeting on the battlefield and fighting these duels, which are amazing. And the one epic duel in the snows outside of Moscow is just stunning. This is a great film. Carradine's going to be there in a moderated conversation afterwards with NYU
Schottner.
Professor Harry Schottner, and you can't miss this.
We're showing another Ridley Scott film this year.
Aliens.
That's right. Thank you. It went right out of my head for a second. Right. We're screening that outside in the amphitheater as part of the Arts Progressive on the lawn. All the UVA arts are getting together, and it culminates in an outdoor screening in the amphitheater of Aliens later on this year. The Stan Winston Studio will be working with students to create moving creatures, and they're going to have actually a parade of moving creatures out there before, along with a jazz ensemble doing alien-inspired music. And that's Friday night at about 9 o'clock.
Gentlemen, we have reached the end of the show. There's 120 films in this year's festival, the 25th anniversary festival. Go to virginiafilmfestival.org to find out more, to buy tickets, pick up this week's Hooked, to pick up a schedule. Drew Thompson is in the building with Les Temps Review, the best of 80s and alternative music. I want to take the last 30 seconds to thank you both for coming in again this year. Jody, thank you for always coming in, for being a supporter of the program. I've been producing the Wake Up Call for, I've honestly forgotten, 3 or 4 years now. And I actually told Rick a couple of weeks ago that at the end of this year, I'll be retiring. Mm-hmm. I will not be the regular producer anymore. So we are looking for someone to come in and help out with the role. Angie Cruz is here today. She's been with us for several months. She's been doing a great job, but she could use some help. But I may be called back in for a special occasion, such as this show and the Oscar show that we do early part of the year. But I want to thank you for your friendship, for continuing to come in here and talk to me and support the show. And everybody, you need to go see the Virginia Film Festival. We'll see you at the movies.
Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, The Wake Up Call is also supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.